Welcome to a special edition of the Texas Hour with Pratt on Texas, featuring an interview with a thinker, writer, doer, or someone with an interesting story to tell.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this podcast extra from Pratt on Texas. And we have the privilege of dealing with the subject that I've been involved in my entire adult life. That's Second Amendment rights, gun rights. And of course, I've been around that. I mean, intimately involved way, way back when it took years to get concealed carry passed in Texas. And we got that done and was involved and for many, many years worked with organization on gun rights in Texas. And of course, you long-term listeners of the show know all about that. We've got a guy that, to me, I'm sure he doesn't feel like a young guy, but he's a young guy to me, and he's gotten really involved in the last many years, and we need that. His name is Wes Verdell. Is that how you pronounce it, Wes Verdell?
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's right. A lot of people get it wrong, but you nailed it.
So all right. Wes is from the heart of Texas. He's from Brady and went to Brady High School, served in the United States Air Force, and he is a Texan who got involved a decade or so ago, I think, on gun rights issues and open carry, constitutional carry, other things, and got busy with a group that decided to finally get active in Texas, Gun Owners of America, and he was in the Hill Country as a coordinator from 2020 to 2022. He's now been named the Texas State Director for GOA, Gun Owners of America. Now, before we go any further, Wes, Larry Pratt and the Pratts, Gun Owners of America, been spokesman for years. No relation, just so everybody knows, no relation with me, but they've done good work.
Yeah, that's crossed my mind before, too.
Yeah, no, I've always seen them out there all these years. Congratulations, though, on being named Texas State Director for Gun Owners of America. Tell us about about it and about your decision. Let's talk about your decision. What was it that motivated you to decide, you know, like the rest of us, I'm working 50, 60 hours a week to make a living, take care of my family, do everything else I got to do. By gosh, I'm going to take off time and go to Austin and go to all these things that are just excruciatingly long and boring and detailed. But, you know, so it's real service. For those who have done it, they understand. What was it that let's go ahead and use the pun. What was it that triggered you?
So it goes back to about 2008. I got out of the Air Force in 2008, and I was big into listening to talk radio back then. And anyways, 2008, get out of the Air Force, go back to my hometown, and I start thinking, hey, I want to carry my pistol, and I'm out a lot. I want to open carry because I'm in the woods a lot, hunting and whatnot. And anyways, so I start looking at the penal code, and I realize that we're not allowed to open carry in Texas unless we're on our own land or traveling. The only land
under your control, property under your control, which somebody else gives you the right to hunt on their land, you have the right to carry because you have the right to hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But otherwise, I wasn't allowed to open carry a pistol. And I thought, well, that's not right. And I started looking, and we were only six states, one out of six states that didn't allow that open carry, some form of open carry. And we were in there with Florida, which people think is very pro-gun, and they're really, they've got a lot of gun laws working against them right now. And then also, we were there with California, New Jersey, New York, Illinois, if I remember correctly. And that just blew my mind that we think of ourselves as a very pro-gun state. And it turned out we were in the bottom six states. Which
But I will say you've got to look at that data pretty carefully because a lot of those states had what we called friendly traveler laws or other laws like that, but they weren't. Let's just put it this way: their local enforcement didn't match the spirit of the laws in those states. Yeah. I would say that many of those states, for example, today's New Mexico, when we used to have this traveling statute that, by the way, I helped work with very hard to get changed, pro gun owners, this stuff has to come incrementally. And we really got that changed. New Mexico was a friendly traveler state, but I'll tell you the culture there's changed so much that you're still very likely to get arrested and have to face charges if you get the wrong cop that stops you. So in other words, some of these states have laws that are one way, and Texas had a law that was anti-open carry. And yet, except in our large urban areas, you were far less likely, I think, and this is all anecdotal. You're telling your story, I'm telling mine.
No, I'm with you.
You get it. You know, you were less likely to be harassed by the sheriff in Brady walking, yeah, you know, going in the heart in the feed store with your weapon. But you're right. And there's a history in Texas, and it's a broader political history that people need to understand. While we are a state that has some of the absolute strongest laws and has for, you know, over 100 years on being able to use lethal force to protect yourself. I mean, our laws on that are far better than almost any other. But, and that's really, you know, where it, the rubber meets the road, as they say, that's important. However, this anti-carrying of gun stuff is just the old bigotry of the Democratic Party. This stuff came about to stop minorities during Reconstruction. Soon as Reconstruction ended, the laws began to be passed then in the early 20th century, more all over the same thing. Fear of race riots, fear of minorities having guns, because, you know, I guess when you create an entire political regime from top to bottom based upon, well, let's use that word apartheid from South Africa, you know, segregation, where your child can't, if that your child drinks out of that water fountain, the nice one at the park that says whites only. I mean, can you imagine what that would be like to have your child run off by the cops or arrested or you arrested for it? So, yeah, they didn't want the minorities to have guns. And so I think it's important we tell the story of why Texas was where it was. Democrats ran this state. I was still, you know, a big Republican activist working hard when they still were the majority party for 100 years. I mean, I was there when we took over. And it takes time to change things. But that's important, I think, for people to know. And I mention it simply because you're now out there speaking on behalf of gun owners for your organization, Gun Owners of America. And I think it would behoove your organization to really do a little fact sheet on history. There have been many great pieces, because I think people need to understand that. Why was Texas? I mean, Texas in the movies, you know, everybody's carrying a gun. Why was it illegal to carry a gun and illegal to carry wire cutters? I mean, it went far beyond that. I mean, we just cleaned that law up a few years ago over the fence wars. And so we had a lot of restrictions on individual liberty. We had other laws, though, that I think even all the way through until now were far better than others. So
yeah, I would agree with you on that.
So you were out there, you get out of the Air Force, you're at home, you say, what can I, this is Texas. You know, and of course, by the time you're doing this, we've already got concealed carry and a lot of, we've changed the momentum.
Yeah, passed in 95.
Yeah, the momentum is going back the other way. And so you see this and you say, why in the world can't I carry my gun ever without having to worry about being harassed or arrested? So pick it up there.
Yep. So, the first time I went to the Capitol was in 2011. I found out you could go to the Capitol, you could go to committee hearings, and you could actually give testimony. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I showed up, I signed in.
That's 90% of it, isn't it? We can both agree now. That's 90% of it. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so, you know, I sign in and it's just a really small world at the Capitol. The activists that show up, you get to know all of them pretty quickly.
Yep.
And we had a guy named C.J. Grisham, which I'm assuming you might be familiar with. Yeah. So that was at the same time that he was arrested for open carrying his rifle while hiking with his son for his son's Eagle Scout badge.
Yeah, that was a really bad story. That was we covered that, of course, in detail here. And that was a really bad story. That was an example of in my opinion, and according to some other sheriffs and police chiefs I talked to back at the time, really bad policing. I mean, you know, because in Texas, it's being considered, let's just put it this way, no matter what how the letter of the law reads, and it can be interpreted different ways. That's something that people don't understand. It's like when we, you know, when we passed concealed carry and the big city DAs stood up at their conference and said from the lectern, we're still going to tell our cops in our district to arrest everybody with a gun. No, that was after we changed the traveling statute. That simple, you know, that it's legal to have the gun in your car. The DA said, oh, because way over here in another part of the code, it says this or this, you know. And so it took another session or two to get that cleaned up. That Grisham case was really egregious because the man was doing what I think in most jurisdictions of Texas, nobody would have considered to be against the law.
Yeah, it was you know, while it may be abnormal to see a guy walking around with a rifle, he wasn't
not where I'm from
or anything like that. like that. Yeah. And same, I'm from rural Texas. So
In my city, people think you can't walk around. Well, sure you can with a rifle. Even before we did it. And I know in Abilene, they have they're not very free. They actually ban air rifles and pellet guns and BB guns in town, which of course is crazy because it just increases your rodent problems. But in Lubbock, where I live, you can use anything. It's not a non-firearm. And the only prohibition was carrying BB guns and pellet guns around and not firearms, but BB guns, because, you know, you've had problems with kids going down the street and popping windows, and they put that in the code. I mean, the point is, it's what happened to Grisham was terrible, but it's often this over-policing that, or some other tragedy that leads to change. And I guess you got involved in that, and Grisham's case helped lead to change. It takes a while.
It brought a lot of activists to the Capitol during that session. And then they were pushing really hard to legalize open carry of a pistol. And that went on 2011 and 2013. But this is the crazy part. There was a Democrat chairing that committee, and the Democrat chaired that committee all the way up through 2019. And he was put there by the Republican Speaker of the House.
Well, now, wait a minute. He was put there by the pseudo Republican Speaker of the House.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, let's be frank. I mean, Joe Strauss is Charles Budd of HEB's guy. He's not really much of a Republican. I don't care what he says. Oh, I worked in the Reagan administration. Yeah, you were one of the Bush people, that whole cadre that constantly worked to undermine Reagan for all the 8 years. We get it. But yeah, he wasn't conservative, and he had a Democrat in charge of the committee, and that was their way. That was the insider's way of, the way the House works. That was their way of making sure this didn't go anywhere.
Yep. Yeah, they would kill our bill every session. By the time 2015 rolled around, we had enough activists engaging with their legislators and putting pressure on them where they knew that they could no longer hide what they were doing. They had They had to follow their campaign promises, to keep their campaign promises. And, because a lot of these guys campaign that they're pro 2A, and then behind the scenes, they're working to kill our bill or not support our bill often.
That's true. And I think there are some who fervently, truly believe that one can be for the Second Amendment and against open carry. I don't agree with that argument. I just know that there are a few who make those decisions, because it is true that even though we love to talk about the rights being absolute natural rights, they're obviously not absolute. At least I don't take the position that felons should be able to have firearms while they're, maybe after they've served every bit of their term and everything's done and their debt to society's paid and they get the rights back. But there are differences here. But most of that's double talk, isn't it? Haven't you found that when you went to talk to these people that there's a lot of double talk, double speak on these issues?
Oh, yeah. I definitely haven't. And, we ended up 2015 getting that passed, which we were told it would never pass. GOA came on the scene about that time. And Rachel Malone was the Texas State Director for GOA from then all the way up to 2021. And but once we got that bill passed, then we decided, okay, constitutional carry is next on the list. And that really turned out a lot of activists. 2017 and 2019, they killed our bill in committee, wouldn't even let it get to calendars or anything like that. And then in 2021, they actually passed it. So I actually ran for state rep against a guy that all of his campaign mailers that he would send out would talk about how pro-gun he is, how much he how much he supported and worked towards gun legislation for us. And anyways, but I know the truth that 2017 and 2019, he publicly was telling people to constituents, I won't support constitutional carry. So we see a lot of that, like we talk about double talk. And then 2021, he finally got on board on the last day that he could and supported the bill. But through activism and through people engaging with their legislation, we ended up getting it passed this year. And the difference between all the years before was this time we had a Republican chair in the committee.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. I've got problems with the current speaker, but we've got a much better speaker than we had before on these issues. Yeah, he has problems too, but they all do for the most part. But I mean, it's night and day. I mean, he's some issues. I'm very upset, but he's actually a Republican. For all my criticisms, you're on the air, which are always specific to policy. He's it's a million times better than the than the pseudo Republican Joe Strauss. Let me ask you this question. We're visiting with Wes Verdell. He is the newly appointed Texas State Director for Gun Owners of America, which is a group that came out of California many, many years ago, a state senator. Don't confuse him with the New Mexico governor, but Bill Richardson, Republican back in the Reagan days and all that stuff. You, state senator Bill Richardson in the 70s, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the movement in the country was towards almost no gun rights. I mean, we were getting down to the point where in many states and municipalities, it went even to the point of whether it was enforceable or not. They didn't even want you to have firearms in your home. You had an obligation, such as in Massachusetts, even in a home invasion with violent action, even if someone was murdering, you did not have the right to shoot them. If they were shooting at somebody else, you had the obligation to retreat or else you were the criminal. And that's what was happening. They were prosecuting the citizen, the store owner, for defending himself against criminals. And that pendulum had been swinging. And then things really began to change when the crime rates just got the crime rates. I mean, everybody's grabbing about crime rates right now and they're bad, but they're nothing like they were in the 1970s through the 1980s. And we see the crime rates turn around as this pendulum changes that gives citizens the right to defend themselves. And we begin to re-bolster the Second Amendment jurisdiction by jurisdiction. And Gun Owners of America. Sure there is. And Gun Owners of America, plays a very different role, I think, than the organization or has that I've been affiliated with my entire life. And when we come back, I want to talk to Wes about GOA. I have some very pointed questions about it. I have some things about it I don't like, but don't confuse that with I don't want friends at the table, because it takes all of us. In fact, Wes just told you, we got this stuff done because of you. It's not because of Wes or the other executive director or Tara, the NRA lobbyist, or anybody. It's because you all showed up. And don't ever forget that. That's when politicians pay attention. We'll be back in a moment with this podcast extra, visiting with Wes Verdell of Gun Owners of America.
Pratt's interview continues after you hear from our generous sponsors.
If you're sick to death of the mainstream news, we invite you to check out 21st Century Watch magazine. We cover developments we have no choice but to watch from a biblical perspective. Not only is it priceless, it's free. Call 903-561-7070 and 21stcenturywatch.com. That's 903-561-7070 and 21stcenturywatch.com. A little hope would be nice.
The name may be Specialty Trucks of Lubbock, but these guys have repeat customers across the country. Why? Because they save you serious money. Mike Crafton and Jason Duncan specialize in finding and reconditioning quality work trucks, including heavy-duty pickups, utility-bodied trucks, bucket trucks, and more. Specialty Trucks of Lubbock can get you the work truck you need and save you money. You can see inventory online at specialtytrucksoflubbock.com or request them to find the truck you need. Talk to Mike or Jason at specialtytrucksoflubbock.com.
If you're self-employed, you have a special health insurance problem. Michael Hurley of Hurley Benefit Services.
I'm trying to help the individual out there who makes too much to qualify for any help, any subsidy or benefits from the government towards their health insurance, but does not have the income to pay the incredibly high premiums we find if you're buying your insurance individually.
You can have individual or group coverage that is a lot better, that costs a lot less. HurleyBenefits.com. H-U-R-L-E-Y Benefits.com.
A Texas Aggie from the big country said he and his wife visited Dr. Sylvia Zuniga at Dental Care in Costa Rica, spent about $7,000 on the entire trip, and yet saved over $5,000. He asked, how could it be any better? Our Aggie friend and listener wrote, thank you for recommending Sylvia. Her work and service was what you said it would be. Very good. It took me several months of listening to you and researching on the internet to finally decide to do it. So glad I did. He added that the dental work he had done would have been about $12,000 at home, and of course that wouldn't have come with a fun vacation in which he and his wife toured volcanoes, hot springs, a nature and wildlife park, a coffee farm, a central market, and took a riverboat ride, went ziplining, and dined at some nice restaurants. Learn more about Dr. Sylvia Zuniga and Dento Care by clicking the banner at PrattOnTexas.com. Finally, having your teeth fixed and beautiful can be affordable and even fun.
What happens if another party responsible for your injury doesn't step up to make your loss whole? How do you go about getting what you're owed for your loss? Ted Liggett and the Liggett Law Group can help get those responsible to actually accept and act on that responsibility. Ted Liggett does it every day with integrity, advocacy, and results. Call Ted Liggett, the heavy hitter, at 806-744-HURT or visit LiggettLawGroup.com. Don't be cheated. Call Ted Liggett and the Liggett Law Group.
With the stories that matter, it's your Texas political swami, Robert Pratt, on Pratt on Texas.
This podcast extra features from Pratt on Texas, features Wes Verdell, the new Texas State Director for Gun Owners of America. Wes, you're from Brady. You're a central to West Texas guy. I mean, I think Brady's West Texas. I know they love to talk about the heart of Texas and all that, but yes, pretty much when it doesn't rain, I played at Brady Country Club or, you know, the golf course this last year. It was as dry as Lubbock. So if it's dry like and they don't have all these natural grass and these roughs outside the fairways that are big, thick grass, it's West Texas.
I actually grew up working on that golf course too.
West of the rain line is West Texas in my book.
Yes,
anyway.
Sir. Yeah, I'm with you.
It's a neat golf course too. I love the stories they have in the clubhouse and in the men's room and all that with all the greats of golf that used to come out there to play back in the day and tournaments.
You know, my best friend has his picture up in the bathroom of him winning the championship.
Oh, yeah, that's your buddy.
You've really made it. You're really in the toilet. Your picture's in the bathroom.
Yeah, you're in the toilet at the country club. Oh, anyway, it's the city run. It's very – the lady running it, by the way, was – that's to me, when I go play these other courses, the people working there and how nice they are is as important or more important than the course because I'm not that good a golfer. And, boy, talk about nice people there. Anyway – you're the new Texas State Director for Gun Owners of America. Gun Owners of America has a slogan, and it's that they're I think I got it from Ron Paul, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. The problem I've got with that is Ron Paul's no-compromise meant he never got anything accomplished, very little in his career. I like Ron Paul. I have a lot of admiration for him, but the problem is I've been at this my entire life. You've been at this a while now. I've been at this, two and a half times longer. I mean, intimately involved in D.C. and here. Look, I don't care if you're trying to change parking signs. It takes three sessions of the legislature in Texas. So that's 6 years. I mean, you've probably been told this now, but it is true. Historically, almost every bill, unless there's some kind of horrific, giant public outcry, and even then it often doesn't get done, it takes three sessions to get a bill passed. So 6 years.
Yeah, that holds true with getting the open carry passed and the constitutional. There's about a six-year period.
And it's every other bill I've worked on everything, okay? It's everything. I mean, no matter how common sense it is, it takes that long to build up the support and get it done and get it through leadership. One of the reasons is also has to do with priorities. There's just so much that has to be done or needs to be done or that's on their list. The hardest part's getting your bill to the priority lists for enough people. And so Gun Owners of America, I've worked on all this stuff. I've known the lobbyist. I was involved for years. I never saw anybody from Gun Owners of America. They were never there. With us, there was no official lobbyist. I don't even remember. There could have been. I don't even remember people testifying in committee. And yet, and this is a criticism of your organization and why I've always been a little suspect, even though because Larry Pratt is a Pratt, you know, the spokesman for Gun Owners for all these years, I kind of had a warm spot in my heart for GOA. emotionally, I'm a no compromises guy, but practically you have to. GOA, still, when they weren't doing a thing in Texas, were sending out through their national deal fundraising letters here, and they fundraise off this stuff. And this has been the big gripe that those of us who were in the trenches had. They're sending out stuff. Look what's going on in Texas. Look at this. And all this stuff. But they were asking for donations, but those of us that were there working on it, and this has changed, so folks, don't misunderstand me. Wes and others have been active for the last decade. And a little more than a decade now. But this has gone on a long time. And it got Gun Owners of America the reputation of being a group that fundraises over the red meat stuff in the news and doesn't actually have an organization on the ground. And even today, and I'm going to let you respond to all this, but even today I was going to the website and I'm looking. Associated with GOAR, and you got Florida, Tennessee, it's something called Empowered 2A, Gun Owners Foundation, which is, of course, going to be the foundation side, California, Texas, and Pennsylvania. Now, Gun Owners of America has this giant national fundraising footprint. It looks like even now, after they've stepped it up, they're only active in a handful of places. So what do you say to that? Because I'm telling you, that has been a serious, amongst the gun owner political active crowd, this has been a real criticism of Gun Owners of America for a very long time.
Yeah, so probably before my time, maybe on some of that stuff, but 2015 is when GOA came on the scene to Texas real strong. And that's one of the things that had bothered me. And in 2011, the first time I showed up to the Capitol, there was an organization that I was donating money to, and I get there and that organization wasn't there. They weren't asking people to come to the Capitol, and I thought, what's being done with my money? And anyway, so Open Carry Texas, I started contributing to them, helping them out how I could. And then GOA came on the scene very strongly. And so now we had this really big national support for the Open Carry. And that's when, like, I'd been a GOA fan because of some Supreme Court rulings and whatnot. But anyways, this was when I saw them actually in my home state doing something. And so that's when I started getting more involved with a lot of those people.
Well, yeah. I will tell you that there was a lot of controversy about Texas State Rifle Association, the NRA affiliate and NRA, and NRA keeps a lobbyist in Texas who's been extraordinarily effective. And we had an older, longtime lobbyist who gave of her time so much. We probably wouldn't have concealed carry until much later, had it not been for her at Texas State Rifle Association. Great lady. But after a while, they begin to believe that they've done it all and they know it all. And I'll just tell you, open carry was not the priority. The members vote on the priority. The priority were fixing some other laws and getting things solved incrementally. And then people come in who are fired up from the outside. And what happens is we end up getting nothing done on either side because it blows up the issue. And that's their insider's argument. There is a lot of truth to that argument, okay? There's also a lot of truth to the argument that certain stayed and people become part of the, I don't need to go any further. They just all of a sudden, it's somebody else's issue and they don't want to mess with it because it didn't come out of their deal. I think there was a one session to two sessions, and then there were personnel changes after that, by the way.
Yeah.
One session to our, two sessions in which our NRA state affiliate, not the national, they were good on all of it. The TSRA kind of controls it and sets the agenda, the state affiliate does. I think they kind of poured cold water on the open carry stuff for a while, and it infuriated the members, and I think everything takes longer than it should, but it ended up in some changes too.
I was a paying member of an organization, and they openly badmouthed Open Carry.
Yes.
And that was about the last time I think I ever sent money that way.
Well, I'm a life member or endowment member in RA, and I'm a life member of the Texas State Rifle Association, and I've seen the work that's done, and all the work that we've done has been incredible. And as we become a more urban state, had we not done that work in the early days of the Republican majority in the legislature, gun owners, it'd be like living in New Jersey or California. You'd be subject to arrest for lots of things. I mean, even just having the gun in your car, going somewhere. And so there's been a lot done. And by the way, I mentioned Larry Pratt forever and ever, because he was the big spokesman forever GOA. Now I think it's his son, isn't it? Eric Pratt's the senior vice president. He's got 11 children. He has 11 children. I mean, my gosh, how does he have time to do all that?
Yeah,
it's a wonderful.
We're actually going through a restructuring process right now. When you ask about what is GOA doing,
yeah, tell us.
We have a new director of operations, and we're trying to put in a really good infrastructure inside of our organization. And we're working on getting more state directors in each of the states. For the states that are very big, spread out like the Midwest and whatnot, we have a regional director. And so they'll look over a few states and work with legislators in each of those states. But we are making sure that we are getting more involved in state level. Because really that's where most of the change is going to be made, is at your local and state level.
Well,
federal is a different beast.
I think what you're tacitly telling me is the organization now realizes that the organization or its new active people understand that the old criticisms, there was a lot of truth in them. GOA was Larry Pratt being on television and in the newspapers. Basically, the organization was a handful of people and a very good spokesman. And by the way, I'm not putting that down. He was very good at it. I've always liked it. But there was no ground game. It's an attention getting thing.
Yeah, they were primarily focused on Supreme Court issues and ATF issues at that time. If I remember correctly.
Yeah, and it goes way back like that. And so I'm glad to see the change. I think the more of us, the better. I do think that the Texas State Rifle Association and its people probably learned a lesson from your. I think there were changes. I think more different people to the board. There'll always be friction because it's one group and another group. But frankly, we ought to be working together. But I will say this: I'm still bothered with GOA's the emails and messaging I get from GOA, even during those legislative sessions going back. Let's say not the last session, but before that and the one before. You're not going to win votes when you. I don't know how to put it because it bothers all of us. It seems so smarmy because
say fundraising.
No. It's the thing that longtime listeners know. I'm pretty uncompromising too. You know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff you have to put up with elected officials. You're not going to agree with all their votes, but if they're with you most of the time, like Reagan pointed out, you know, or Bill Buckley talked, if they're with you 80% of the time, that's no reason to destroy them. However, GOA seems to have taken that kind of in-your-face, punch-em-up attitude that has gotten, at least they did, and that doesn't win you votes. Everybody else gets, even guys that like you, I'll tell you what happens inside because I've been on the inside, they get afraid of you, and they start to think, not afraid in a good way, they start to think, you know what, these guys could turn on me too, why give them the time of day? I'll give them a nice pep talk, pat them on the shoulder and said, thank you, and yeah, I'm with you, and then get them out of my office. They just don't want to deal with you because you just can't do this. You have to build consensus. And yes, part of that is having voters come at them and show up.
Yeah, that's our main focus here in Texas is we're asking everybody to be engaged with their legislators.
Yeah, and that's what you do. That's what you do. There's no reason taking a guy there's no reason taking a guy that's voted with us 85% of the time and blowing him up on a statewide email blast during the middle of the session for some ticky-tack something. Now, that's not to say you don't tell it right. If he's on committee and he votes the other way, of course you go after him. But you don't have to paint the man as the devil. I mean, you know, we have some Democrats that have voted with us on a lot of our gun bills over the years, quite a few.
Yeah.
They don't vote for everything.
Two or four Democrats supported it in the Senate this year.
I'll tell you, it wasn't always this giant majority. And I'm telling you, we needed those votes to pass things. We had to have Democrat votes. We had to have them to have concealed carry in Texas. So that's why there is compromise. I mean, you know, when we started with concealed carry, we had all kinds of exceptions and all kinds of silly stuff in the training. And then little by little, every 2 years, we came back and we pared it down. But, you know, you had to do what you had to do to get it passed. And I hope the new on the ground GOA understands that, because a lot of their messaging, and I get emails from backers, oh, look what's going on here. What's up with, you know, and I just, it's frustrating to me because I want more of us at the table.
Yeah. I would say on the no compromise, our goal, it may take a couple of sessions to get something done, but our goal is to make sure that the citizen's Second Amendment right is not compromised.
Right. And so, I think it's good that you tell people who's voting what way. I mean, that's great for your membership and your mail list. I mean, that we need to tell them. All right. Now we're coming up on another legislative session. And that is going to need, always, we're always trying, and I mean we as in Second Amendment people, I don't care if you're at the NRA affiliate or any other, Shooting Sports Foundation, whatever, we're always out there trying to tighten up and clean up law. Our laws are just, they're full of stuff.
Always looking at the penal code.
Yeah, there's always stuff you find, and the enemies use it against you, and then they start arresting you, you know. It's just shocking. There's always stuff in the hopper. What's the big thing that GOA is thinking about in the upcoming legislative session? What's the big priority for gun owners of America?
You know, one of them is the 18 to 20 year old. Mm-hmm. Right now, currently, you got to be at least 21 for constitutional carry or permitless carry is what it really is. And anyway, so we have our legal team right now writing legislation.
Now, we just had a court ruling on that, didn't we? Or was that?
Yep, so now that's kind of changing our approach a little bit on this particular bill. But it is that we think that our bill will just clean up and be in alignment with that judge at that point.
Yeah, and the governor has jumped on board with that. He's pretty, he's not the best advocate for stuff because he's a little cagey and never tells you, but he's gotten pressed into it, over this shooting. So now he's in the corner of, hey, wait, the courts have ruled. That's the way it is. We're going to have to be 18-year-olds. And that's the point. If 18's going to be the age of majority, 18's when you can go fight a war and be drafted. And we did have exceptions. You know, talk about incrementalism. We couldn't get it all done, but we got exceptions for guys that were in the military to be able to carry and stuff. You know, there were, it's this little incremental. So the big goal then is to clean up all that statutes for 18 to 20 year olds. And then what else?
So another one that we're looking at is stay on criminal proceeding. So if somebody is being criminally charged with some kind of gun violation at the moment, we want to make sure that they can't be civilly charged at the same time. So there will be a stay where while you're under criminal investigation, you can't have a civil lawsuit against
you. Oh, I like that. So in other words, you're not talking about, you can't deny people the right to sue civilly. That's just bedrock as the Second Amendment. But what you're saying is you can't pile on and destroy someone while they're facing criminal charges. And of course, this is what happens. It takes all your resources. You end up going in debt. You're trying to fight whatever. And then they get you with the civil. So you're dealing with two things in the same time. What you're talking about is while a criminal matter is pending, until that is resolved, no civil suit. So you have to wait. Very good piece of legislation. I can't think of the specifics, but in my mind, I know there've been some news stories I've covered over the years that involve that. Anything in particular that's driving GOA in that direction?
No, that was actually our legal team is the one that brought that up. You know, they think about things from a legal perspective that we don't always think about and that they see. And that was one of the ideas that they had.
It's a good one because we've seen it. Because, for example, an acquittal or a dropping of charges on a criminal case is going to affect, because that's admissible. It's different than outside stuff into a criminal case. But in a civil case where you have much looser rules and a lower burden of proof, those things are exculpatory. For the person being sued. I mean, it's because they sue you. Their kid broke in your house and you shot him, and they claim, you know, they're on the TV screaming, oh, he only had a golf club in his hand, and they put 18 rounds in him, you know, the typical stuff. So you're waiting for grand jury to come or whatever, and they file a maybe there's a not a no bill. Maybe they place a bill because there's some other circumstance in this. But then they're going to have some big high profile lawyer. They're going to be in the TV camera suing you civilly at the same time. Well, let's wait and get a jury under strict standards to determine what actually happened first before you're having to deal with the other. And I think there's a wide range of reasons that's important. What else?
That's another one. So you mentioned grand jury. We want to make sure that the defendant has representation in the grand jury.
Yeah, that's got to be changed and everything. This has been a gripe of mine since I was in high school. I'm a law and order Republican, but I'm first and foremost a constitutionalist. We don't like using the word civil libertarian anymore because the left took that over. But that's what we are. If we're a constitutionalist, we're a civil libertarian. And the fact is, we've got to remember as pro-law and order conservatives, it's the old maxim, it's better to let 100 guilty go free than one innocent to be deprived of their liberty.
William Blackstone.
Right.
He's the one that
the basis
that
of law, Blackstone. And I'll tell you, this grand jury process is a real problem. It is an absolute one-sided show. We see it with the indictment or attempted indictments of our political leaders in Texas going back for a long, long time. I mean, the Democrats, when they were still running the show, they were divided between conservative and urban lefties, and they even did it to their own guy out of Ronnie Earl in Travis County. You know, they indicted Bob Bullock wrongly, just like they did Kay Bailey Hutchison. And this stuff has got to stop. And on the gun, on all this, you need some kind of representation in the grand jury process.
Something interesting about that, you mentioned the William Blackstone quote, and there was a study, a research done where they went in and they asked Democrats and Republicans, would you rather see a guilty person go free or an innocent person be convicted, you know, so that I'm kind of messing it up a little bit. But basically what they found is that on the Republican side, we would rather prefer to see, we would be okay with the guilty person being ruled innocent over an innocent person being ruled guilty. But it was the exact opposite on about an 80% to 20% scale of Democrats thinking the exact opposite. They would rather see innocent people being charged versus a guilty person.
It doesn't surprise me. There's such a warped view of everything these days. Wes Verdell, the website where people can go to is real simple. It's gunowners.org. You can click through is the to get to the Texas. Do you just go to the about page there and
Or just type in texas.gunowners.org.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. I'm looking right at it. Apologize. Yes, sir. It's just grayed out. It's grayed out on my browser the way it does that. Yeah. Texas.
I'm sorry about that. I normally just tell people just Google GOA Texas.
And yeah, it works. So. I don't do Google because Google's our enemy, so I use something else. But texas.gunowners.org, texas.gunowners.org. Wes from Brady, Texas, is our new Texas State Director in GOA. Congratulations, Wes. Apparently, you need to work really 90 or 100 hours a week because you're taking your regular job.
I'm actually sitting on the side of the road right now.
we've all got to do a regular job, and then we do this stuff. But let me tell you, my days of wanting to sit through committee hearings and all that, you know, I did that so long that I'm just sick of it. It's a lot of fun sitting there for 8 hours waiting to testify. We need folks like you, and I'm always excited when people come on board. So, folks, if you want to learn more, there's a little at the gunowners.org website. There's a press release up right there with Wes talking about him. So, Wes Verdell, V-I-R-D-E-L-L. He is the new Texas State Director, Gun Owners of America. Again, the website, texas.gunowners.org. Wes, best of luck. Keep us informed, and we'll talk again when it comes legislative session time. So, can tell people what we need, because I spent a decade or more rounding up people. I'm telling you, my audience is incredible. There was a lieutenant governor at the time and some others that said, my God, your audience, 200 or 300, you know, serious calls or emails on the gun issues we were dealing with at the time. And the public thinks public thinks their voice doesn't count. And I've always told people this. I ran campaigns. I've been on the inside of this. Wes, I know for a fact that city councilmen have mentioned that 10 emails on the same subject is a groundswell. You know, the public thinks their thing doesn't matter, but I'm telling you, I can call up directly the district directors or the legislative directors for, you know, a dozen state reps right now, and every one of them would tell you that if they got 10 or 15 calls from within their district on a particular subject, that starts the lights flashing in the office. I mean, you can always exempt one or two big red meat issues that the media is talking about. Okay, granted, those may do thousands and thousands. But when it comes to everything else, even very important things, a few dozen people making contact with the legislator is very powerful. So keep up the good work.
I had friends used to give me a hard time. Like, what are you going to do? Email your legislator? And I was like, yes, I am. That's what
it works.
That's what makes a difference.
It's what they pay those staffers to look at, and they correlate it and they count them. I mean, I've seen some I remember years ago when I was doing this, it'd be a spiral notebook and there'd be the subject at the top. And it'd be columns, you know, facts. Back then we were doing facts, you know, more than email. Facts, phone call in district, and then a mark for in district. And I mean, and this thing would be full. They watch it, and it matters. So keep up the good work, Wes. Thanks for the time.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Get on down the road, my friend. Thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
Hear all the great Texas music Pratt on Texas is famous for by listening to the show on the air or by stream. 5 to 6 p.m. Central in Lubbock. Tune to 98.7 FM or 1420 AM on KWBF. In Abilene and the Big Country, tune to 96.1 FM Q Country.